right, and welcome to another episode of Two Guys, One Level, a place where two guys talk about all things gaming. I'm your host, Tortuga, accompanied by Pixel.
Welcome back, everyone. First recording of 2024. Excited to kick it off. Let's go ahead and get this ball rolling.
All right. First item on the docket, let's bring up Ubisoft. We got a lot of things to talk about, but I want to bring up something that the CEO kind of threw at us not that long ago. In a nutshell, he basically said, gamers need to get used to the fact that they do not own games that they purchase. What do you think about that?
You're going
to
make me start off 2024 nice and hot, aren't you? So Tortuga and I have spoken on this on several occasions, especially more in a private setting in our group chat. But it was during the early days of Game Pass, Xbox Game Pass, where he was very adamant that Microsoft is going to implement their subscription model anywhere they can. It's just a moneymaker for them. We've spoken in an episode on how they've been prominent with it in their cloud space with Azure, how people spin up the servers, and it's basically a cash cow for Microsoft, which is how they're able to manage a lot of their acquisitions, most notably the recent Blizzard Activision acquisition. And unfortunately, the way we know that corporations like to corporate, this is very, very much the future. It is not something that I agree with, but if you look at even Best Buy, I think like a year or two ago, started removing all like their music medias, like CDs. And then they made the announcement not too long ago where they're also going to be removing like DVDs and Blu-rays. They're no longer going to be selling those, the physical copies. So a lot of companies are absolutely moving toward a generation of digital-only media. And I don't want to defend him at all. But the CEO of Ubisoft, I think that it wasn't him specifically saying that that's what Ubisoft is doing. I'm sure they will at some point, but that's the reality on the direction that a lot of these companies want to take. So the quote was that consumers got comfortable not owning their CD collections or DVD collection. That's a transformation that's been a bit slower to happen in games. As gamers grow comfortable in that aspect, you don't lose your progress. If you resume your game at another time, your progress file is still there. It's not been deleted. You don't lose what you've built in the game or your engagement with the game. So it's about feeling comfortable with not owning your game. And again, I do not agree with this, but it is something we are seeing in two very notable releases. We have Alan Wake 2 that recently came out. That was a digital only on the Epic Game Store. And I think everywhere else that it was available on console as well. And Microsoft is doing that with Hellblade 2 that's coming out in May 2024. That's also going to be a digital-only release. These companies will move toward a more digital-only acquisition. And there's honestly nothing that we can do right now. The only thing that I would probably recommend is that if there is a game that's coming out, maybe a limited run with a physical access, capture it. You take a look at how a lot of older games are just no longer available or extremely expensive to acquire. You know, perfect example, I was talking about Twilight Princess HD that came out for the Wii U, and I did just a quick search for it. And that game is well over $120.
The physical copy or?
Right, the physical copy.
Yeah. Yeah. I run into that all the time whenever I want to play like an old Pokemon game, like one of the cartridges, easily run you anywhere between $70 and $150.
Yeah. And, you know, it's atrocious. It's just sad, that availability.
And yeah, it's annoying to say the least. But we've been going towards this for a very long time. It's always been easier to digitally download your game. And in the gaming industry, made it to the point that even if you purchased a physical copy of any game, you still had to download the exact same game onto whatever console you're playing. So the disc that you were getting never held the game anyways. It just held the fact that you purchased the game and that you were allowed to now download it onto your machine. So there was never really a benefit to buying physical. there hasn't been one for a very long time. It was just a way of saying that, you know, the game can be downloaded to this machine. That's all that disc does. And you can't even play it unless that disc is in your console. So it's now an extra step where digital, you just go to your library and pick the game that you want to play. So they made it less convenient to buy physical, and it's been gearing towards that for a long time. To now go fully digital is kind of wild, especially given that the prices are not going down at all. The funniest clapback that I've seen when the CEO said this was, if, you know, buying a game doesn't count as owning it, then piracy doesn't count as theft.
That is right there. I 100% on the nose. You know, actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because I want to say one of the heads, if not the creator of Larian, clapped back at it on the same thing as well. I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was basically that he doesn't agree with it. That it doesn't make any sense. So something that was surprising.
Mm-hmm. I can understand for some things, like, for example, Sony would probably be the closest that will fall under this around. And then you can chime in with anyone else that you think falls under this. But if you don't own the IP like 100%, for example, Sony did not create Spider-Man, right? That's a Marvel IP that Sony bought the rights to use, but it's still a Marvel IP. If something were to happen to that contract, Sony will then no longer be allowed to make Spider-Man games, right? Or force them to pull Spider-Man games from the store. Or something to that effect. When it comes to something that's licensed out, if you're not the first party or the creator of that IP, I can see where this comes up and would be an issue.
I think probably most notably, we could probably take a look at Star Wars for that. For Star such Wars a long is a time, big one EA, too. Yeah, EA had the hold. Like, anything that was Star Wars, EA made it for years upon years. And it wasn't until their Battlefront 2 fiasco that, for the first time in forever, that they were not exclusive to that. So, you know, Sony is still in the works of making Knights of the Old Republic remake. You have Ubisoft coming out with Star Wars Outlaw. So they are not, EA no longer has like an exclusive license to Star Wars. So now,
and they lost their license to FIFA.
Well, yes, but that was at agreed. That wasn't out of
No, I know. I'm just saying that it just falls into, you know, now they can no longer make games. They can no longer make a FIFA game. So your circumstances can change if you're a producer or a developer, especially with an IP or genre or just anything that isn't your IP or created by your company. So I don't know. I can see that happening if you're forced to pull a product because of something like that. But Ubisoft doesn't really have that. Just about everything Ubisoft puts out is owned by Ubisoft.
Right. You know what was really surprising to see is opposed to the Ubisoft comment on this was actually CEO of Take-Two, Strauss Zelnick. I could not believe this. Right, we're on Take-Two is the parent company of Rockstar. But he said that he's not convinced that subscriptions are ever going to supplant individual game purchases. And that that none of the big publishers are so confident about subscriptions that they're willing to go all in on it. Now, to be fair, I'm sure they plan to sell about 3 trillion copies of Grand Theft Auto 6. But still, you know, to see that the top CEO of a major publisher is, you know, publicly disagreeing with Ubisoft's take on the digital aspect and less of physical ownership.
I'm actually kind of surprised by that. I would think that there would be plans in place to move to a subscription based, you know, basically the same thing that we got with content media, with like TV shows and movies or what have you. Started with Netflix and then came Hulu, Prime Video, Tubi, the list goes on. Where it's gotten to the point where you're now subscribed to 7 or 8, 10 different services, and you're paying way more than what people were paying for cable when that was initially what started off this whole, you know, on-demand movie thing. I feel like we're heading towards the same direction with gaming. So it is surprising that someone on top of this industry is saying, no, that's not where we're headed at all. A lot of people don't like that. That's very surprising to hear. considering that we've already seen it with music, we've seen it with television, and we've seen it with cinema. So for some reason, gaming is holding back on this.
Well, we saw a couple months ago, remember there was that report that came out where video games, you know, have a greater profit than TV, movies, and music combined.
That's actually kind of wild.
Mm-hmm. I forget exactly where it came from. But yeah, like video games, you know, as a general medium, generates more profit than all of those other mediums combined. And that was pretty insane to see. Yeah.
That's interesting.
I mean, it's great to see. I'm glad to see that it's profitable, but there's always that slight skepticism that someone's going to try to overtake that, and then it's just going to be a downturn for the community as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, it's everything's always one bad decision away from ruining it for everyone, but we're not there yet. It's good to see the gaming industry leading in something and pivoting from the gaming industry. What's up?
No, so I agree wholeheartedly.
And speaking of gaming industry leading once again, did you peep NVIDIA releasing three new cards, three new GPUs?
The Supers?
Yeah. So yeah.
And decently priced.
Yeah. Decently priced and decent upgrades to what they're supposed to be replacing. And it's just strange just the way that they're releasing things. Just gonna jump into it. So the three new cards are the 4070 Super, the 4070 Ti Super, and then the 4080 Super. And it's just, if I'm not mistaken, that now gives us four versions of the 4070 and now two of the 4080.
That does sound right.
So people, it's just more confusing more than anything. But they do beat their respective counterparts. So the 4070 Super is better than the 4070. And the 4070 Ti Super is better than the 4070 Ti. And the 4080 Super is better than the 4080. And about $300 to $600 cheaper than the 4080, which is wild.
It's absolutely wild. And I honestly think it has to do with the fact there's been a lot of chatter in the last, I'd probably say, 2 or 3 months where NVIDIA is likely to releasing the 5000 series very, very soon.
Interesting. So we can see prices go down even more when that happens. But it's just, yeah, I saw this and I cannot wrap my head around this announcement. Like, I'm glad that these are here because I'm in the market for upgrading a GPU. And then they make this announcement. And I'm like, because I was looking at the 4080, but it's so pricey for what you're getting. And then they're like, we're going to drop a card that's way better than the 4080 for about 30% of the price.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is currently. And honestly, I'm grateful to see that they are moderately priced, you know, considering how we definitely looked down at NVIDIA for a while, the way that they were continuing to overcharge for their cards, even after the chip shortage was addressed. So they were charging, what was it, like $1,500, $2,000, something like that.
After the
scalpers were kind of dealt with.
Their 4090 MSRP was around $1,600. And then all the retailers were selling it for about $1,800. And then the scalpers were the ones that came back with $2,400 plus for the 4090.
Yeah, we definitely became a little bit of a negative Nancy's with NVIDIA. They were corporating like we expect corporations to corporate. That's pretty much the only way that we can take a look at it. And it was unfortunate because NVIDIA was one of the companies that you could kind of go to. Like, they put out quality items for, you know, decent MSRP. Usually knew you'd be with your card for a while. I mean, even with the 20 series cards, people were still on the hunt for the 1080 Ti because of how amazing that card was. With the release of the 2000 cards and their super counterparts as well. So to kind of see them fall prey to the scalping idea and just overcharging for their cards. It definitely didn't put them in a great light. But unfortunately, when you have a monopoly on a market like that, you can tend to do whatever you want.
And let's not forget another important note, and this is good for anyone listening. The 4K Siri cards are basically useless if you don't have a system that's running games at 4K. It's not going to do that system any good unless maybe you're doing like content creation, processing videos or editing videos or AI training or things like that, where you need the GPU for processing purposes. But in the terms of gaming, the 40 series doesn't really change anything if your system is really supporting 1080 gaming, or even 1440 for that matter. If your cap is 1440, then the 30 series is honestly a better purchase, and will save you a lot of money and hassle, because you wouldn't even get those performance numbers that the 40 series are even capable of. So it's just something to keep in mind, that these cards, while they're great, if your system's not putting it to its full potential, you can save a lot of money by upgrading to something that your system can properly utilize.
Exactly. You know, a lot of people like to jump into the biggest and baddest. You know, they'll get a top tier, we'll say, video card, but then they'll be rocking a 5-year-old processor or something like that, or, you know, 5th gen right. processor. So it's like you're not even utilizing any of it to its proper potential. And that's not, we're not even talking about like overclocking or anything like that, but just using right. it to 75% or more of its potential.
And then just one final note, I can't remember off the top of my head, but the latest AMD card, I want to say 7980, I don't know, I maybe well, their numbers throw me off. But if your system is capable of 4K gaming, literally, this card performs just as good as the 4090, except when ray tracing is involved. So if you don't require ray tracing, or that's something that doesn't appeal to you as a gamer, you can save so much money. Because I want to say that card's around $800 or $900. That goes toe-to-toe with the 4090, which is a $2,000 card. The only thing that it can't keep up on is ray tracing, because that's an NVIDIA-created product. So there's nothing AMD is doing right now to try to get ray tracing running on their cards. I mean, we might see something, an equivalent one day, but as of right now, with this ray tracing stuff, NVIDIA is the only one that's capable of creating something that can handle ray tracing, which is something that a lot of people don't even see anyways.
Right. And that's also, not to talk crap about AMD, because when they came out with, what is it, their Fidelity 2.0, it's able to kind of upscale a lot of graphics in the background. So AMD cards are absolutely worth it. Like a lot of things, people normally jump into NVIDIA just for the name brand that they're mm-hmm. they're familiar with, or it's like more commonly known. But don't sleep on AMD, for sure. Actually, the only thing that is NVIDIA is my graphics card in my personal build. But I definitely went the AMD route instead of Intel. So kind of like the same thing. I took a chance, and I honestly love my AMD system.
But you're just rocking the CPU, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Which are fantastic CPUs. I see them, those numbers come up, because they lead in what is it called? Multi-thread as opposed to single thread. And then I was actually looking this up this past weekend of, does anything use single thread, which NVIDIA beats AMD in? The answer is no. Well, that's not true. Very simplistic things like your calculator or your notepad uses single thread CPU processing. Whoa. But when it comes to gaming, that's a little different. Some games are coded to run better with single thread but very simplistic games versus multi-thread, which is what's most common. And AMD just blows Intel out of the water when it comes to CPU. But moving on, because we can talk about hardware all day, every day.
Absolutely.
Have you peeped this Palworld game?
Man, so we spoke about Palworld, I want to say at least over a year ago. I know we touched on it, and mm-hmm. I am so grateful that I forgot about it until the day before it came out in Early Access. Like, I saw it. I saw some gameplay from some people who had some promotional codes for it, and I was ready for it. I have only played for like an hour. Like, I scoped out some of the initial section. was working on like building some stuff. I haven't even gone out to like catching anything yet. But I am really excited to see what they do for this. I think at this point it's like the second paid game with the most concurrent players at like 1.2 million. And then it has sold, I think as of right now, 4 million copies. Which kind of reminds me of the Valheim release, where it was kind of like in the same boat. I think it was lagging behind as far as like the time frame sales. But overall, it's nice to see that. I would say this would fall under a double A game, right? Would you agree with me there?
Yeah.
So it's nice to see that, you know, something that would probably fall under the double A game category is selling so well, so they can have that support behind it for future updates. It is releasing in early access. It has good bones. They do need to tweak some things.
A lot of things.
As far as Tortuga will probably have more notes on this. I think he's touched it a little bit more. But overall, I'm digging a lot of the designs that I've seen. And I'm curious on how this is going to work for Pokemon. I know a lot of people are having this question, where they will probably now have to cross-reference ideas with Pal World to make sure that they're not duplicating efforts or making Pokemon that are essentially a copy.
Yeah, I think that's going to be Nintendo's biggest hurdle with Pal World, because it picked up popularity. We weren't sure where it was going to land. We saw the trailer a year ago, and we didn't know anything about it. It just came out, Pal World. It just showed these very Pokemon-looking creatures wielding guns, rocket launchers, and flamethrowers, and all this good stuff. And nothing else was said. They showed a little bit of the game, and then that was it, right? That's all we had to go on. And the game was dubbed Pokemon with Guns almost immediately after that trailer came out. And not that this game isn't Pokemon with Guns, but it's so much more than that. It's like the Pokemon with Guns part is a very small part of Pal World, which that part, you know, threw me for a loop. As you know, these survival type games, as cool as they are, they're not my cup of tea. But I've given many of them a try. It's too much work. It feels like a second job every time I play this, and I have the same issue with a game like WoW that does this perfectly, where you want to do something, but you need to go hunt for the raw materials to build this item that then builds to this bigger item. And then you finally do that, and then you're like, all right, now I got to do this other thing. And now you got to start all over to grab resources because you don't have enough rock. You don't have enough this. You don't have enough that. Incredibly annoying. But it appeals to so many people, and Pal World is more of that type of game, the survival resource hunting type of game, where the creatures you collect called pals actually are there to help you refine your resource management and resource production. And that's really more of their role in this game. But when you do adventure and come across dangerous creatures or enemies or what have you, then they can come in and help. And if you equip them with a gun or whatever you give them, then they will help you out with said equipment. So it's a very interesting game, a one of a kind. But at the same time, it feels like it stole concepts from every major game out there. More specifically, every major game owned by Nintendo, because this game feels like Pokemon with the art and feels like Breath of the Wild. It even I even want to say the font is very close to Breath of the Wild, just that they use for Pal World.
Right. You know, I was thinking on what you were saying with the grindy portion of it, of these survival games. And I think one of the things that will probably keep people here is when they don't have to do as much. Because I believe you'll be able to have pals like build for you, gather resources, and then they'll help you hunt or catch other pals. Like a pretty prominent screenshot is this Electabuzz looking thing. It's like Totoro meet Electabuzz with a minigun, and then the player character is on his shoulder. Like that alone sold me. I didn't even question it. I didn't even question purchasing this game. I was like, I need to see what this is about. If I don't like it, I don't like it. At the Steam price of $25, I honestly cannot complain, even if I just get a couple of hours out of it.
Yeah, I mean,
which I know I'm going to get much more.
It's been not bad. I know we spoke about it offline, but I personally feel that this game is incomplete. And granted, it is an early access, so obviously it is incomplete. But I will forever compare it to Baldur's Gate's early access that felt like a more complete game than what they gave us in Palworld. It's just me playing through it, it just honestly felt like a bunch of ideas just thrown at this and basically trying to see how it sticks together. I don't feel any of it, you know, being cohesive. Exploring is okay. It honestly, it's just all resource grinding. And then you go to an area and everything's going to out-level you almost immediately if you travel beyond your means too fast. But maybe for those that play the survival games like Ark and Rust and Valheim, you know, you already know what to look for, what to prioritize and things like that. But for newcomers like myself, I just see it as just a bunch of randomness. Now, the game does get a lot easier once you figure out how the creatures help you, because certain creatures are better at certain tasks. And once you start figuring out how to prioritize and designate those creatures to specific tasks, the resource management becomes a lot easier. That then lets you explore the game and just go through materials and all this other stuff that comes with Palworld. But for the most part, there's no story. There is a little bit, but it's so not in your face that it's in the background always. It's just strange. It literally just feels like a sandbox right now. And I guess that's the part that I'm not okay with. It just feels like a sandbox.
I can see that. I honestly haven't even got that far. Like I said, like I spawned, I crafted some stuff, some weapons. I kind of felt bad. It felt like I was about to start clubbing a seal. So I wasn't really okay with that yet. But we'll see how it progresses. I am very curious to see what their roadmap looks like. It's not something that they're going to put out as of yet. But I am sure as those dollar bills start rolling in, that they'll get a little ambitious. I just hope they don't get too ambitious and just build on what they have instead of doing a completely 180 and taking the game somewhere else.
Yeah, don't pull a full Fortnite on us. And it's gonna be interesting because Palworld came out strong, and I think it's here to stay. I think it's gonna develop a solid fan base. We're gonna have to wait in a week or so to see where the numbers hang after it loses its initial hype. But I think that there's enough here to keep people coming back. I think even when the hype dies, when the game fully releases, people are going to come back just to see how the game is going to play. But from what I've seen, we haven't tried this yet, but multiplayer with, you know, it's a 4-player co-op game. It seems to run smooth. No issues there. There was a couple issues at launch on Steam, but that's not uncommon with large releases. Even though Palworld was not a large release, but just the demand just hit the servers at full force. And it's not uncommon for things to roll out slowly. But once people were able to get online and servers and connect with their friends and peers, it's smooth. Not very many issues with the game. So I do commend the publishers for that, because that's, you know, something that we're starting to see a lot more of, but we're not there yet where we can expect this to be the norm. So it's still an outlier for a game to be running smoothly on launch day, which is sad, but that's where we are. But as you can see, people have been complaining for a while and developers are listening. And it does take these smaller companies to make these games and splashes to make the bigger guys listen. Like, hey, this is what people are going to pay for from now on, and not incomplete game.
And you know, they're not a newbie developer, I guess I would say. You know, they are the developers of Craftopia, which is, you know, also an early access. What's kind of concerning for me is that it's been that way since like third quarter 2020, something along those lines. It's a bit more action oriented and it has mostly positive reviews, but the concept of the crafting isn't new to them. So I I hope that it's not in early access as long. Like, the only thing that was acceptable was Baldur's Gate 3, but that game is absolutely phenomenal. It got the pass from me for sure. And I don't know. I hope the game succeeds. You know, I wonder if they're going to take the Pokemon route and, you know, create new pals, you know, and potentially new areas. You know, who knows what direction they're going to take. I'm excited for the development. And I don't know. I wish them luck. I really do hope the game does well and doesn't die immediately. You know, Valheim kind of kept up steam, I want to say, for about a year. But overall, it's fallen into that only the niche players are really, you know, hardcore into it. So that particular fan, it's a very specific genre. So, like, I get it. You know, not a lot of people like these single player games. They enjoy multiplayer games more. So that already kind of divides the fan base from that aspect in the genre alone. And then it's the type of game, like Tortuga mentioned, that survival crafter is not for everyone. And you really have to do a lot to separate it from all the other survival crafters out there.
So since you play more survival crafters, how close is it to the genre? Do you feel like it's at the heart of the genre, or does it feel like this is left field for survival craft?
I don't know, man. I turned 30 and like a brain switched in my head where I didn't want the games to hurt me anymore.
But I'm talking about how does PAL World fare with the genre survivor
graphics? As of right now, the closest one that I can pinpoint it to is going to have to be Valheim. They are very similar as far as their resource gathering. The building, again, I really haven't played much to it. I think the simplistic building from what I've seen in PAL World is actually going to pay off in the long run. Like in Valheim, you legitimately need to be like a civic engineer or structural engineer to make sure that your structures don't fall and collapse. Like it is, yeah, like it's something.
I'm playing this game, man, and I'm telling you, it feels like I'm playing a Fortnite character on a Breath of the Wild map with Pokemon running around. That is my capture of this game so far.
My man's playing an emulated game.
Like, this game does not seem real. Like, if you look at your character, the way that it swings, the way that is like your actual character, your PC, your playable character, it looks and feels like a Fortnite character. The way you swing your axe, the way you move while you're shooting, it looks like they just copy and pasted all the movements from Fortnite and put it into this game.
Well, let me throw it from this aspect. If you were going to make something that feels that's not as reliant, I guess, on the shooting, wouldn't you make it easier? I mean, Fortnite, from that aspect, other than like trick shots, I guess you would want it to feel familiar from a game that has such a large fan base.
No, man, because I hate Fortnite. I don't want anything to be familiar to Fortnite.
You hate Fortnite. You hate Fortnite, but it has its success for a reason.
They definitely pulled that in here, and I think that the simple building mech comes from Fortnite also, because there's no structural integrity when it comes to Fortnite creations. We've seen people create 8-star hotels in the mere seconds in Fortnite lobbies. So it's so I feel like, yeah, PAL World, it just, that to me, that's what it feels like. That's what it looks like. That's what it plays like, especially with building. You can literally just build, as long as you have all the resources, obviously, incredibly fast in PAL World, very similar to Fortnite. And we're going to get to a point where people are going to build, there's going to be a speed run to how to make a 3-bedroom house in PAL World. And that, you know, it's just, there's just, it, that's going to be a sect of speedrunning soon, because you can do it. It has such a Fortnite feel to it, and I just can't shake it. But like you said, I'm not the only gamer in the world, and there are millions that enjoy it. And honestly, I can see the why there's an immediate success, but there's still, I don't know what it is, but there's still something missing for this to be complete for me. For starters, background music while I'm walking would be nice, but you know, that can wait, I guess.
Fair enough. Real minor thing, but apparently a couple of former Rocksteady Studios founders have created a new studio for game development. And something that is makes me wonder on 2 points. So they created 100 Star Games is the name of this new studio. And apparently they left about mid development for Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League. So it makes me very curious how the founders of Rocksteady Studios, who brought us the Arkham games, the Shadow Mordor games,
which what I beat, would by cause the way.
Them which one?
Shadow of War.
Shadow of War. It doesn't feel complete to me, but we can get back to that. I felt like there's no real conclusion in that game.
I don't know what was going on to begin with, so it doesn't matter.
You're just killing orcs. I feel you. Yep. I get it.
Literally, I don't know anything about Lord of the Rings. I don't know any. I mean, I know as much as what any passerby would know. There's a ring that people go crazy for, and Gandalf says, "You shall not pass." That's all of Lord of the Rings in a nutshell. And someone says,
"You mean the guy who told his entire party to flee so he could farm all the XP from the Balrog?" Yeah.
Yep.
That guy.
Yep.
That's the one.
I don't know. I've never read the books, never watched the movies. But for whatever reason, Shadow of War just caught me. I could not let it go. Took me forever to beat it, but I finally beat it about 2 weeks ago. And boy, nice. Was that a load of fun. I think I had about 480 hours into it. Definitely got my money's worth.
I would recommend the Batman games. Like, I really would, but there's like a good number of puzzles in there, and I don't know if that'll do it for you. It's basically the same combat. It's like identical. But yeah, probably too many puzzles for you. It just sheds a little more light for me on I am not getting great vibes from the Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. It was the initial trailer or gameplay showcase a couple months ago that the game looked like it was made for a PS2. And then the trailer was updated. It looked good. We saw more gameplay, but it did not feel like in that wheelhouse. It felt more like Gotham Knights more than the Arkham series. Probably the only reason to play this game is for the final appearance of Kevin Conroy as Batman, which are going to wrap everything up as far as like the Batman Arkham games, you know, like what they are going to consider the canonical ending. But there is also going to be a tribute to him in the game. So that's kind of nice. I am not paying full price for this game. I don't know if the Joker's in it, but you know, Mark Hamill did the voice of the Joker, and he has very publicly stated that he will never play that character again because of Kevin Conroy's passing. So that was kind of sad to hear, because you know, I've been hearing those two portray that since like 1994 or something, you know, like in almost every medium we're there together, they've always been that counterpoint. So we'll see what happens, but this game is not getting the greatest publicity. I honestly think it's gonna fall under the same route as the Crystal Dynamics Avengers game.
It also, I saw a little bit, it also doesn't look very good.
It's like a watered down Crackdown with the DC Universe painted on.
Yeah. No, that's pretty great cap of that entire game. It's basically that. It did not look very good. And then I think you were the one that shared that clip of IGN complaining that the Flash is too fast.
That's the other one that I was clipping. IGN, what are you doing? Where is your integrity on this? You're complaining that the Flash is too fast. No, they did. I truly believe that IGN did.
Until people started buying 10s.
Right, exactly. Once people started buying 10s on these game reviews, that was the end of it for me. I think the last true review that they did that I would respect is probably Super Mario Galaxy 2 or 1, whichever one got the higher score. I think it was 1. Because that was a phenomenal game, and that deserved it. And like that was it. Like, I don't know what they're doing. Like, how can you, such a notable and for some reason respected news reporting sex, you know, people thing, and just how could you release that? How could someone review that and agree to release it? Like, what you're complaining, the flash is too fast. It was a boss fight. So, of course, you want it to be at least a little challenge. But to complain about the Scarlet Speedster's speed, I don't know what to do with you guys. Like, truly.
Yeah.
I was so annoyed at that clip.
I haven't played it. I saw the clip. I haven't played the game and I haven't seen anyone play it. But maybe there's an environmental kind of thing that you can do to slow them down. Make the floor wet. Drop some grease or oil or whatever. I don't know how the game works, but all I know is that the Flash has weaknesses. So I just feel like they had a very non-DC knowing player playing that game for IGN, and that was their report. That's the only thing I can come up with.
But regardless, the only person who would say something like that is someone who does not have experience playing games or those types of games.
In general.
Regardless if it's the Flash, if it's anything with where their primary ability is speed, of course. I mean, look at the desert boss from Breath of the Wild, where it was like thunder or lightning. Like, that was a challenge. Ideally, you would parry it before it hit you, and that's probably how you would have the easiest time. But still,
think of any boss in Mega Man X. I mean, the entire game was built around figuring out what their weaknesses were, or else you got your ass kicked.
Right. Like, it was just, you just struggle so much. And that's not exactly a new concept either. So
it's not going away anytime soon.
So, like, I don't understand. Like, you shoot them in the foot, you know? Like, I don't know. I was extremely annoyed at that video clip.
So funny. And I kind of want to look up the walkthrough and see how simple it is to take them down. I bet you it's just something stupid, something simple. I feel like they would do that or maybe not, because they did a terrible job with the rest of the game. So maybe they did make this boss fight impossible to complete.
You know, let's move on, because I'm going to get tight. We did have an Xbox Developer Direct this week, where they showed off a couple of things. Most notably, we got some updates on Avowed, Hellblade 2, and Indiana Jones, and Visions of Mana. I think there were a couple other more, but I think those were like the major ones. We can start with Hellblade 2, part of the Senua Saga. It looks good. I didn't really play the first one to have a solid or respectable opinion on it, other than it looked really good and dark and gritty. But that's getting a sequel in May of 2024. I was pretty shocked at the Indiana Jones game. They're going more for a first-person thing, which somehow fits. I was really expecting a third person, which they do have like third person moments in the game. But overall, it's a first person. His main thing is his whip, which they found pretty creative ways to use it. So I'm glad from what I saw in that trailer. I'm not really a big Indiana Jones person. Like, I respect the history of it and its success. But overall, it's not really my thing. I'm really interested to see how, I think Nolan North is the one that's doing the voice. If they would have gotten Harrison Ford, I'm pretty sure they would have gone bankrupt because of how expensive he is. And then Visions of Mana, I want to say that is a Square Enix thing. And they're, you know, they have like their Mana universe. So that looks pretty cool. Hopefully that gets some success, just because I like these little RPGs. You know, I'm a big fan of Octopath Traveler, which I think was really, really well done. But one thing that they did different in this direct, which I absolutely appreciate, is that it wasn't Microsoft that was doing these announcements. They actually had the developers come out and do their own presentation.
That's pretty old school. I like that. That's how it used to be.
I appreciate that very, very much. And then the last thing was Avowed. So we got to see some gameplay of Avowed. Avowed looked really rough the last time that it came out. And it was very disappointing to see, because Obsidian is such a great developer. Like, they truly are. No, they really are. You have Knights of the Old Republic. You have Fallout New Vegas. You have
Obsidian. I don't know why I always plug Obsidian as Bethesda, but no, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so Obsidian has a they want to work with them, but they've done mainly side stuff. So Knights of the Old Republic was like their project solely. They didn't do as great with the sequel, unfortunately. But then Fallout New Vegas is probably one of the most favored Fallout games out there. But it's not part of the Bethesda one. It's more of like a side game, which they did try to reach out to Bethesda to do the same thing with the Elder Scrolls series. Kind of do like an off game that's not a mainline game. And then again, with Avowed, like I mentioned, it looked really, really rough with what they put out before. But looks like they've done a bit more with the combat. It does look like it's worthy of the budget that it's going through right now. And I'm kind of excited for it. I don't get full retail vibes off of this, unfortunately. So I think it's going to be a much smaller scale kind of Elder Scrolls game. But overall, I am excited to see what the game comes with. We've been mentioning for a while where the quality of a lot of games just doesn't really feel there. So yeah. When something comes out, we will probably forever praise Baldur's Gate 3 for hopefully putting a lot of these developers in line because of how well done that particular game is. Honestly,
it cannot be stated enough how great of a job Larian Studios did with Baldur's Gate 3. The only part that they did terrible in was releasing the game in a timely manner. But given that they recorded just about all of it with voice actors off-site, that extra level of need for technology is just going to slow things way, way down. But other than that, Larian Studios did such a fantastic job that we have to hold everyone else now to this standard. Regardless of what these developers say, that they're not going to do it, we have to hold them accountable every step of the way. It's just, we have to. And looking at Avowed, the game looks terrible. It does not look like a current gen game. This looks like something that we should have had with the Xbox 360 days. It does not look like something that we should be releasing in 2024 or beyond. It is not as polished as you would expect it. It looks like it's going to feel just like Skyrim did back in the 360 era, which is terrible given how far we've come since then to basically try to pull us back over a decade in the gaming industry. It does not look great. This looks like a $5 purchase for me.
And to ruin Tortuga's day, Avowed will be available with a planned release this fall, 2024.
It's not going to ruin anything. I'm not buying it unless it hits. I'll play it if it's on Game Pass, but that's as far as that's going
to
go.
This is going to have to be a modded game for sure. Like I said, it looks okay. And I should not be paying full price for a game that looks okay. Like I saw a I was just on YouTube, just randomly scrolling, and I saw the Enter the Matrix game. You ever play that one?
No.
It was a fun game, and that's pretty much all you can really get out of it. You had Niobe and Ghost, and you played as them, and you had a game in the Matrix, and it was awesome. But there's a lesser known game, which I think was much, much bigger, which was Matrix, The Path of Neo, where you played through the trilogy where they went to when he was under downloading the Kung Fu, they made a whole section of that, which was much longer than it should have been. But it was you played as Neo as he was learning all of his moves. And the combat for its time, we're talking PS2, OG Xbox, the combat was really good. And I think they did a great job at putting a trilogy of movies into one game where the Wachowskis actually had a hand in the development and the writing, where they changed how the final boss fight went, which was really cool.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance and you're just bored.
It's way too old.
Not to play, but like just to see some of the combat.
Oh yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, I'll do that for you to appease you. I don't know if you're gonna play it, but I'm pretty sure you have a World of Warcraft expansion that was announced over at BlizzCon.
Nani? Yeah, I always support the freshest freaking version for whatever reason. I'll play it for about 3 months and then give it up. I don't have the time to dedicate 26 hours a day to grinding in order to get to be subpar in raids. It hurts. It hurts putting in that many hours in a week, and then you grind, do mythic plus and all these other types of grinding to get things to then make it. Because remember, I'm guildless, so I have to do it the harder way as opposed to getting carried through all these things by pugging and all this crap. So it's just way too much time to go into it. But yeah, all that to say, yes, I will be getting it.
No idea what's in it. I will definitely
order it
right now.
It's already pre-ordered.
World of Warcraft. This isn't really our kind of, I guess, podcast stuff, but did you check anything out at CES? There were a lot of
TVs.
Oh my God.
I made a note to talk about CES 2024 because we normally don't do that, but holy crap, many cool things.
Yeah, no, a lot of like their TVs like really impressed me.
TVs. I was looking at a lot of cases that are coming out, a lot of laptops that are coming out. Asus put one out. I forget the name of it, but I bookmarked it somewhere. It looks good. It looks like it's going to outperform the M3 MacBook. I can't wait for that to draw so people can do comparisons to it. But currently right now, the best laptop, like as far as performance goes with creating things, not with gaming, but for like actual for workload, is the M3 MacBook. But this laptop looked like it can compete with that.
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with it, check out CES. It's usually a lot of the big tech stuff that kind of like what E3 was to games. CES is like that. It's like technological products and things like that. A lot of cool things on there. Samsung had a couple things out there. Razer, Intel, AMD. Like we're in it. I'm really excited to see what the what's this company? Oh my God, I can't remember them. Phisons, I think PHISON. They're coming out with a PCIe 5.0 SSDs that they basically said it's gonna outperform the previous gen, but it's not gonna need cooling and it's gonna be faster. Like, hello? Like, that's where we are right now. We don't even need fans in our SSDs anymore. So
and I saw the numbers that they were saying. Like, again, we need third party testers to confirm what these first party people are putting out, because they've been known to lie when it comes to marketing. But double to triple of what Gen 4 can put out, which is insane. Insane. We're talking about things right now that can put out, I want to say, about 6 gigabits per second transfer speeds. You're telling me that you can do 12 or 18 gigs per second transfer speeds? It's hard to believe.
It is. No, it absolutely is. So I'm really excited to see what's going to be out when it's time for me to upgrade my machine.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. I feel like this year is going to be a huge year for upgrade, because I go by the 30% rule. If you don't know what that is, essentially, I don't upgrade a computer component unless something comes out that can perform at least 30% better than that component, and then I'll upgrade it. And typically that means that your component will stay in your system for about 5 to 6 years. But it looks like with this Gen 5 PCIe components across the board is going to blow everything out of the water. I mean, it was expected to when PCIe 5 was announced, but now that things are coming out to sustain those speeds and we're actually going to get them most likely this year, it's going to be the year for upgrades for a lot of people, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. I want to say, I think that's it for me. While there were a lot of news stuff, that's nothing else has really caught my attention that's worth it. nothing really coming out. People are working on, there's like allegedly a full build of Marvel's Spider-Man 2 for PC from the leaked files that went out. But I think they're a little scared to put it out so they don't feel anyone's wrath.
Funny.
There was this one thing that set me off. So I am not against DLC if it's something that I feel is worth whatever the case may be. But apparently the next Yakuza game, I think it was Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, if I'm not mistaken, they are putting New Game Plus under a paywall. I think it's going to be like $15 to play New Game Plus that you have to buy separately from the game. A game which I'm pretty sure is already at the $70 threshold.
That's wild.
Yeah, I just had to throw it out there. My jaw dropped when I read that.
Well, I was saving this for you because you can go ahead and take this article and throw it in everyone's face from here on out. A recent study done at the University of Luxembourg, where basically they wanted to see if playing a violent video game actually makes a person more violent, turned out that playing violent video games actually decreases stress in an individual.
Or to quote Captain Holt, vindication. They could have just asked me. I would have told them that. been playing Grand Theft Auto for how long now? That tracks.
Yep. So, in the same study that was done, they had him play games like Grand Theft Auto, Uncharted. Can't find the full list, but just violent games where you can blow shit up, and then they would capture their take some blood samples and check to see if any chemical reactions were to happen, and they found that very few people had an increase in testosterone, but almost all of them had a reduction in stress by some chemical, whatever the stress hormone is. They saw a reduction of that in there were 54 male participants in this study. So a very interesting article to come out when it comes to this. But of course, you never see these things make major headlines. But it's just interesting to see, one, that people are actually spending money for this level of research. I don't know what they're aiming to gain from this other than to kill that one comment that games make people violent. But if that were the case, then we would have 2.2 billion people rioting every day. But we don't. So that was, I feel like it was a waste of money, but it's kind of cool to have it proven. We'll see if the study goes anywhere else. But I thought you would enjoy that.
That was very enjoyable. I very much appreciate that. Now to rub it in everyone's faces.
Basically, I can send you the article if you want. But a pretty cool read of all the stuff that they pull out from it. Very interesting. Very interesting. Double check, make sure that there's nothing else. I have some more Pal World stuff, but we can save that. But that's pretty much it for my end as well.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it for me. Well, thanks everyone, and I'll let Tortuga take us out.
Yep. As Pixel said, thanks for hanging out with us yet another week. You can always reach out to us at Twitter at @2guys1level. Let us know what you thought of this episode, any previous episodes, and what you would like for us to talk about in any future episodes. Again, thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll catch you all next time. Till then.